Hello, my friends. It's Tuesday, April 8th, 2025, and I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, your Red State refugee, and welcome to the Radical Russ Show, coming to you from Rolla J Studios in my undisclosed mountain hideaway in the beautiful state of Jefferson region of Southern Oregon. Plenty to get to on today's show. We take a look at the U.S. stock market and Donald Trump warning people not to be a panickin'. No, not a pelican. A panickin. We'll explain that. Also, we get an update on what's happening in our concentration camp in El Salvador. The case of Kilmar Abrego Garcia made it all the way to the Supreme Court, and we'll tell you what the latest is on that case. Also, an update on the mom and three kids in upstate New York who were removed by ICE as they were searching for someone else. We've got some good news in that case. Speaking of more good news coming out of Texas, where unfortunately we've had two deaths because of the measles outbreak there. And yet Robert F. Kennedy went down there, the Secretary of Health and Human Services went down there to the funeral of the child and came out in favor of the measles vaccine. Oh my God, will miracles never cease? We also have the update on that National Park Service story about Harriet Tubman and more destruction being wrought upon our digital archives by the Doge Boys. Then we've got a troubling story of the firing of a U.S. pardon attorney over the case of Mel Gibson and his gun rights. It's pretty shocking. Also, we've got a couple of Democratic senators finally standing tall and putting some holds on nominations and bills. We'll give you the names and what's going on there. In our regular Boycott Idaho segment, we'll tell you how the state of Idaho is encouraging you to waste energy by changing its rates on solar repayments. Then, for my radical rant, we'll take some time to explain how the Democrats can regain power by becoming the party of the people, the party of the poor, and the party of prosecutions. But before we get to all that, let's talk a little bit about sports. Congratulations to the Florida Gators basketball team for winning the NCAA championship. And once again, for Ted Cruz bringing the Cruz curse to the teams from Texas. Houston was playing in this game, and according to the reports, I didn't actually get to see the game, but Houston was up by double digits when it was announced Ted Cruz had showed up there to cheer his team on, and from that point on, they went on to lose by two as Florida goes on a 12-point run and a heartbreaking end to the game. I was reading about it, how Houston had the ball for the last possession. Their shooter went up for a fake jump shot and lost the handle on the ball. It dropped in front of him. He's unable to touch it again because of the rule about double dribbling. So the ball just kind of bounces there and the clock runs out with them unable to even put up a shot. Once again, Ted Cruz ruins it for everyone. He's done the same thing for the Houston Astros and for other teams where he shows up and those teams go on to lose. So if you are a Texas sports franchise, maybe you ought to get the word out. Please, Ted Cruz, don't show up to our games. We'd appreciate that. The other thing I wanted to note is my continuing crusade to dump the ump. I'm going to make that a hashtag now. Dump the ump, because I keep seeing these little clips from baseball games where they show the pitcher and the batter, and then they got that little electronic square that shows where the strike zone is. And the one I saw this morning, as the late Bob Uecker would say, just a little outside. This pitch was, my God, it was a whole foot away from the strike zone, and the umpire calls it a strike. Dump the ump. Why do we have a human being still calling balls and strikes in baseball when there is a quick and immediate electronic way to determine it with 100% accuracy? Insane, especially in the era now of sports betting, where this one fat guy in black sitting behind the catcher could make bad calls that could swing millions or billions of dollars worth of betting. Dump the ump. Well, it's been an absolute bloodbath on the stock market the last 3 days. We have checked in with drops of over 1,600, over 2,000, over 1,000, over three successive days, dipping into the 38,000 range from a high of about 45,000. But we check in on the markets this morning, and my God, they're up 1,400 points. Dow Jones trading around 39,300. So what's going on here? Is it just the investors realizing that the floor has caved in and swooping in quick to make some big deals? I'm not sure. I don't understand how big money works. But I do know that Donald Trump had something to say about it yesterday, and maybe they're reacting to his tweet. He had put out a tweet that says, "The United States has a chance to do something that should have been done decades ago. Don't be weak. Don't be stupid. Don't be a panican." P-A-N-I-C-A-N. Parentheses. A new party based on weak and stupid people. Be strong, courageous, and patient, and greatness will be the result. And, well, what do you know? Now the market is up 1,400 points. Is it really just that simple that Donald Trump just has to call people names and they revert to buying stock? I don't know how it works, but it's got me flummoxed. Maybe this is just a one-day thing. Maybe the announcement, because we just had the announcement from China that in response to the tariff that China has been assigned in that silly Greek letter equation they put out that determined not what a reciprocal tariff was, but what the trade deficit ratio was. And China had been tariffing us before. I think it was somewhere around 7%, something like that. But now, after we announce our 37% tariff on China, China says they're going to retaliate with another 34% tariff. In response to that, Donald Trump said, oh, well, now we're going to add another 50% tariff. Oh, I'm sorry, it was 54% in the first place, and then 50%. Yeah, so we're going to have 104% tariff on China. At what point are these numbers just silly? It would do a 1,000% tariff, a 10,000% tariff. And I don't see how the markets could be reacting so positively to this news of having over 100% tariff with China. Are people thinking that Donald Trump is going to get his way here, that the bluff is working, that he's going to be able to extort these countries and these industries as they come hat in hand begging for a carve out from these tariffs? I don't know. But the internet is still reacting to panic and wondering what the hell that means. I have a theory as to what he was going for here. He's trying to take the word Republican and make it into panican, but he couldn't put re-panican in there because that would sound like they're panicking again. I don't know how his tiny little mind works, but I think that's what he was going for. Amazing that this would actually bring the markets back up. And I also wanted to get a reaction from our leader in the Senate, the Democratic Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, weighed in on these tariffs with, I don't know if this was helpful or not.
Train that new worker. I better not try that new product. Consumers are saying the same thing. Consumer confidence is down a record amount, more than in a decade, because consumers are saying, if these tariffs are going to hit, I better not go on that vacation to see grandma. I better not buy that new car. I better not, you know, upgrade the groceries I'm buying.
Better not upgrade the groceries I'm buying. Oh my God. In a time when we need someone young and vibrant and a great communicator, we end up with Chuck Schumer, 79-year-old Chuck Schumer in his monotone voice, so out of touch, talking about upgrading the groceries. Yeah, that's what we're worried about with tariffs, is upgrading the groceries. Say, honey, I brought some Lay's sour cream and onion chips home. Lay's? Not great value? Have we upgraded our groceries? Now for an update on our concentration camp down there in El Salvador, where Kilmar Armando Abrego Garcia sits risking his life because he was specifically ordered not to be deported by our U.S. courts. He had sought asylum and he is in danger of being tortured or killed by gangs that he was fleeing from. So he was rounded up and sent down there to our gulag, to our concentration camp in El Salvador, and the government has admitted that it was an administrative error, that he should not be down there. But then the government has thrown up their hands and said, oh, well, there's nothing we can do now because he's down there in El Salvador and we have no power, the courts have no power to get him out. So the courts, it's been winding through the courts, and the judge ordered his return, saying that the federal government needs to bring him back, and their arguments about the jurisdiction fall flat because it's not the jurisdiction of where this man is being held. It's the jurisdiction of the people who ordered him to be sent there in the first place. And in writing this order, Judge Wilkinson, who was appointed by Ronald Reagan, by the way, so we're not talking about some liberal activist judge, in ordering the return of Abrego Garcia, wrote the following: and the government rightfully concedes that it was an error and a mistake to ignore this process. And if it is truly a mistake, one would also expect the government to do what it can to rectify it. Most of us attempt to undo, to the extent that we can, the mistakes that we have made. But to the best of my knowledge, the government has not made the attempt here. The facts of this case thus present the potential for a disturbing loophole, namely that the government could whisk individuals to foreign prisons in violation of court orders and then contend, using its Article 2 powers, that it is no longer their custodian and there is nothing that can be done. It takes no small amount of imagination to understand that this is a path of perfect lawlessness, one that courts cannot condone. Yes, it should seem perfectly obvious that you can't have the United States government violate a court order, send someone overseas, and then when being held to account for violating that court order, throw their hands up and say, oh, we don't have jurisdiction, there's nothing we can do. This would allow the government to pick up anyone for any reason, ship them off to our concentration camp, and as long as they can get it done before any court is aware of it, as long as they can get them to the safe haven of the prison there in El Salvador, like base in tag, I'm safe, can't touch me here. It is the path of perfect lawlessness. So it was shocking yesterday when Chief Justice Roberts, on his own, issued a stay in this case, issued a stay on that order that would have required Mr. Abrego Garcia to be returned to the United States by midnight. John Roberts put a stay on the order saying it needs to be discussed further amongst the entire Supreme Court. What needs to be discussed further? It is so plainly clear to everyone observing this case that the government has messed up here. The government has flagrantly violated the law and flagrantly violated court orders. And that to rule in the government's favor, as Judge Wilkinson notes, would be the path to perfect lawlessness. What is there to discuss? The frightening thing about this is every day that Abrego Garcia sits there in that jail is another day he's risking his life. This man could be killed in custody by the time John Roberts and the Supreme Court get around to making a decision here. And it's also frightening to think what this decision could be. You know, Sam Alito and Clarence Thomas are probably a guaranteed couple of votes for keep them down there, incommunicado, without a lawyer, without any recourse to our court system. You know there's at least two votes there. And you know the three liberals on the court, Justice Brown Jackson, Sotomayor, and Kagan are going to be against giving the government a blank check for utter lawlessness to disappear anyone they choose. Where will the other votes end up? Where will Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, Roberts, and Coney Barrett end up on a case like this? It's not too hard to imagine a 5-4 decision, maybe even a 6-3 decision, declaring that the government can absolutely snatch you off the streets and send you to a torture gulag with no due process. But to temper that with a little bit of good news, we can report on the mother and three children who were abducted by ICE in a case where they weren't even looking for that mother and three children. They were looking for another man who had been suspected of distributing child sexual abuse material. And in the process, happened to go through this school and find this mother and three kids and send them away. Well, the small community of upstate New York where they were abducted from rebelled against this and put maximum pressure on their elected officials. And now we're happy to announce that ICE is going to be returning that mom and their three kids back to that small hamlet in New York. So it tells us that we need to keep the pressure on. We need to not let the next shiny object distract us from the atrocity that we are committing in deporting these people to this torture work prison in El Salvador. And you know what? Let me correct that. We're not deporting people. We're selling them. We have a contract with the government of El Salvador to house these people, and we pay them to do so. So we are selling these people to El Salvador, disappearing them without due process. And there's no guarantee that any of the people sent down there will ever be returned. This will be yet another shocking stain on the legacy of the United States of America. We have some amazing news coming out of Texas, where Secretary of Health and Human Services Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the famous vaccine denier, has come out in favor of the MMR vaccine, measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine, as the number one way to prevent measles. This comes upon his visit to Texas for the funeral of a second child who has died from measles in that outbreak that is now over 500 cases strong. We've had actually three people die from the measles, two children in Texas and one man in New Mexico. Three deaths from the measles is all it took to get Robert F. Kennedy to come around to saying that the MMR vaccine, in his words, the most effective way to prevent the spread of measles. He also said he instructed the CDC to, quote, supply pharmacies and Texas-run clinics with the needed MMR vaccines. And it makes you wonder, what made him change his mind on this? Could it be that he's no longer allowed to just run his mouth as a private citizen and face no repercussions for spreading this anti-vax nonsense? But now that he's the Secretary of Health and Human Services, he's realizing, oh, wait, I could be named in lawsuits over this. I could be held accountable for this nonsense. That's my theory. He's recognized his legal vulnerability on this issue. Of course, this endorsement is in line with all known science on the issue. According to Dr. Paul Offit, the director of vaccine education at Children's Hospital in Philadelphia, as reported by NPR, quote, a single dose of MMR vaccine is roughly 93% effective at preventing illness, and the second dose gets that up to 97%. Texas Department of State and Health Services says that 10 of the 481 measles cases were of partially or fully vaccinated individuals. Only 2% of the people who have been infected with measles had some sort of vaccine. The rest of them, all unvaccinated. good to hear this. Better late than never, but it has infuriated Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s anti-vax supporters out there. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny wrote, quote, "I'm sorry, but there is no defense for this poorly worded statement." You know, she's an expert on vaccines who once claimed that the COVID vaccine would make you magnetized. Yeah, that the COVID vaccine would magnetize your body and you could stick spoons and forks all over your body and they just hang on you because of the magnetism of the COVID vaccine. Yeah, Del Bigtree, a prominent anti-vaccine activist, also questioned the endorsement by RFK Jr., suggesting that Kennedy's post had been cut off before he could get around to making claims about vaccines and autism and the danger of vaccines. Dr. Mary Tally Bowden, a Texas physician who opposed COVID vaccines, wrote, quote, "We voted for challenging the medical establishment, not parroting it." Bowden is one who's on the ivermectin train, an unproven alternative therapy for COVID. But that doesn't get Kennedy completely off the hook for some of the nonsense he's parroting out there. We've seen children being brought into Texas hospitals with liver failure because of overdosing on vitamin A after Kennedy said that vitamin A was one way to quickly reduce your chances of catching the measles. He's also posted pictures promoting two therapies of aerosolized budesonide and clarithromycin. Budesonide is an inhaled steroid, which has nothing to do with measles. It's something you use to treat asthma. And clarithromycin is an oral antibiotic, and measles is a virus. Don't know why you would have an antibiotic to fight a virus. And of course, the doctors asked about that say that both of those things are useless when treating measles. But good on Kennedy for coming around. If it's just the threat of lawsuits that got him to finally follow scientific advice, I guess we can count that as a good thing. Other things we can count as a good thing in our government today is the National Park Service apparently has restored the website for the Underground Railroad that features prominently Harriet Tubman and describes accurately the Underground Railroad as African Americans trying to escape from slavery. Reported yesterday how they had whitewashed that and made it seem all kumbaya. It was all about white and black people working together. They got so much pushback on that, they have restored the original website. That just shows us, folks, that we need to stay vigilant whenever these outrages happen. They want to try to flood the zone, as Steve Bannon puts it, flood the zone with shit. So they're trying to put through as many of these things as they can, hoping that some of them don't get noticed. It's up to us to stay vigilant and scream our bloody heads off when they try to whitewash our American history. Speaking of whitewashing and covering up, we have word from DOGE, the so-called Department of Government Efficiency, that the DOGE boys has gone through and gotten rid of, or converted, I should say, 14,000 magnetic tapes of backup data to new modern digital storage. I can't tell you what a terrible idea this is. Actually, I can tell you, because during Y2K, one of my jobs was doing tape backups for Bank of America. And folks, those tape backups are still readable today. See, DOGE guys, these young kids, have this theory, this working theory, I presume, that if it's old technology, it's bad technology. We saw this with their efforts to rewrite the entire COBOL code base of Social Security. And I explained on a previous podcast how just because COBOL is a programming language that was developed in 1959 doesn't mean that it's bad or inefficient. And in fact, the COBOL code that's running for Social Security and running for banks is some of the most efficient and bug-free code there is out there. COBOL was written back in the day when we didn't have a whole ton of memory to just use
willy-nilly. We had to make sure every bit and every bite was accounted for because of the slow, ponderous nature of the old mainframe systems it was written on. So COBOL code is extremely efficient. There is no bloat. And since COBOL code has been running for decades now, it's damn near bug-free. All the bugs would have been found decades ago and debugged at this point. So going through and trying to rewrite millions of lines of COBOL and replace it with some modern programming language, number one, won't work as well on some of that old hardware because you still have to convert some of that programming language to machine code. That's just adding an extra level of processing there. And new code is going to be chock full of bugs. As we found out when they added some new code they hadn't rigorously tested, and it turned out to bring down a few of the servers there at Social Security, making it impossible for people to log on through the website, which compounds the problems for seniors trying to get to Social Security because they've gone and closed Social Security offices and reduced the number of staff that are answering the phones. This is their backdoor way of killing Social Security, is to just make it so inefficient and unable to be accessed that it just dies from people not being able to access the damn website. So in addition to attacking the old software of COBOL, they're now attacking the magnetic tapes, the hardware that we use, the medium we use, to back up data. And again, just because it's old doesn't mean it's bad. Digital tape, the big old spool tapes you see on the old 70s, TV shows, that spools of tape, those will last 30 years or longer. They don't degrade very quickly. But a spinning hard disk drive that you might want to store on a more modern server in the cloud, those things last 3 to 5 years. And other methods that you might choose last even less than that. Digital tape is one of the most secure methods we can store data on. And here they are converting 14,000 of these tapes to a less secure, less stable platform. Once again, it's just their way of trying to kill our archives and cover up any of the evidence of how they are destroying our federal government. One of the stories that flew under the radar last week was the announcement from our Attorney General, Pam Bondi, that there would be a restoration of the firearm rights for actor Mel Gibson, the well-known anti-Semite. Yes, Mel Gibson is getting his gun rights back that he had lost because he was convicted of domestic violence. Yay, we've got the Trump maladministration giving guns back to wife beaters. What a lovely development this is. Well, there's been more developments in this case with the word that U.S. pardon attorney Liz Oyer was fired over this case. She was the pardon attorney for whom this case came up for restoring Mel Gibson's gun rights, and she was not going to go along with it because, he's an anti-Semitic wife beater. And she refused to go along, and she was fired over this. Well, since she was fired over this case, she was called on by the Democrats to testify about what was going on in this Mel Gibson case. Last night, before she was set to testify, or I guess it's 2 days ago because she testified yesterday. So she was over the weekend. The Justice Department sent armed marshals to this former fired U.S. pardon attorney, Liz Oyer, warning her not to discuss or disclose internal Department of Justice information during her Senate testimony over this case. Well, good for her for not being intimidated, because she spoke out yesterday to condemn the Department of Justice and to defend the rule of law.
But I am here because I will not be bullied into concealing the ongoing corruption and abuse of power at the Department of Justice. DOJ is entrusted with keeping us safe, upholding the rule of law, and protecting our civil rights. It is not a personal favor bank for the president. Its career employees are not the president's personal debt collectors. I see only Democratic members here today, but this is not a partisan issue. It should alarm all Americans that the leadership of the Department of Justice appears to value political loyalty above the fair and responsible administration of justice. It should offend all Americans that our leaders are treating public servants with a lack of basic decency and humanity.
Good for Liz Oyer standing up and speaking truth to power. And have you noticed throughout this Trump maladministration, it's the women who are standing up and speaking truth to power much more so than the men. Congratulations for her for doing this. And let's just get a handle on what we're talking about in this case in particular, because it was a domestic violence conviction for Mel Gibson that had to do with a case where he was beating this woman while she was holding a baby and knocked out her two front teeth. Punched her so hard it knocked teeth out of her head, and then held her at gunpoint while she was still holding the baby. That's Mel Gibson for you, folks. And understand that Trump loves this kind of behavior. He named Gibson, along with Sly Stallone and John Voight, as so-called special ambassadors to Hollywood. That's the kind of men that Donald Trump thinks are paragons of virtue. A guy that would beat a woman, knocking teeth out of her head, and hold her at gunpoint, terrorizing her in front of her child, in front of her baby. That's the kind of people Donald Trump thinks should be ambassadors to Hollywood. That's the kind of people Donald Trump thinks men should look up to. It's one of the most disgusting parts of this era, of this Trumpocene era, is knowing that there's people out there that support this man who think he is doing good for this country, that see him as some sort of avatar of manliness. He's nothing but a punk supporting men who would beat women. This is not the kind of America I want to be a part of. We've got good news coming out of our Democratic Senate, where it's reported that Senator Brian Schatz of Hawaii is placing holds on 50 Trump nominees and blocking 9 bills. He's now holding more than 300 Trump nominees, including former Representative Anthony D'Esposito to be the Department of Labor's Inspector General. Schatz says, quote, "Their lawlessness is escalating and they are intentionally destroying the economy. So I don't think we should make anything easy going forward." Well, that's great news. Holding up these nominees, blocking the nominees, putting holds on the nominees, refusing to assert unanimous consent. These are all ways that the Democrats could be slowing up the government, putting sand in the gears of the Trump maladministration that they should have been doing since January 21st. Let's not let Brian Schatz off the hook entirely here. He is one of all the Democratic senators that voted to approve the nomination of Marco Rubio to Secretary of State. Marco Rubio, who's now going through student visas and finding the people who on social media have said something positive about Palestinians or negative about Israel and kicking them out of the country. So you're not off the hook entirely, but good on you for finally coming around. And boy, it wasn't the sending people to the gulag in El Salvador that got you to come around. It wasn't the installing these unqualified cabinet picks like Pete Hegseth and Kash Patel and Tulsi Gabbard to run our most sensitive military and intelligence operations. It wasn't the Trump administration blatantly violating court orders that got you to speak up on this issue. It wasn't the dismantling of Social Security and our safety nets, but boy, the minute the stock market goes down 3 days in a row, whoa, this president must be stopped. He's intentionally crashing the economy. Looks like it's starting to affect the portfolios of some of us here in the Senate. Maybe we ought to do something. Better late than never, like Robert Kennedy, I suppose, but you could have been doing this blocking this holds. You could have been doing this from the very beginning. It's kind of a bad look that you only come around to doing it when the stock market tanks, and then you specifically say they're trying to destroy the economy. We've got to do something to gum up the works. The little troubling that it took this to bring you around, but hey, whatever gets you on the right side of history. Time for our Boycott Idaho segment, why you should avoid the handmade state. And if you're looking for all of the reasons, I'm up to 59 of them. You can find them on my website at radicalrust.com/Idaho. I've also made it easier to link to any individual reason. If you just go radicalrust.com/Idaho/#, and the number. So if you wanted to link to number 59, it would be radicalrust.com/Idaho/#59 or #59. That'll take you right to that item. And in today's Boycott Idaho, we remind you to boycott the Idaho potato, because no red state is more singularly associated with any one product than Idaho and the potato. They even brag about it on their license plates. Let's let these red states know that we blue states are no longer going to economically subsidize their products if they continue to mistreat their people and abuse the Constitution. Boycott Idaho, avoid the handmade state. And like I said, today we got reason number 59. And you know, I rag on Idaho a lot, deservedly so, for its people and its politics. But I gotta say, geographically and climate-wise, Idaho is amazing. It's a great state if you're into mountains and rivers and fishing and hunting and all that good outdoor hiking and camping stuff. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. And it's sunny. Idaho is a pretty sunny state. It's especially southern Idaho. That whole region from Boise all the way east to Pocatello is in one big high kind of floodplain area. So it's nice and flat, big valleys, and lots of sunshine, over 300 days of sunshine a year in Idaho. So this makes it a perfect place for solar panels. A lot of people have been putting solar panels on the rooftops of their homes, especially with all the new construction and the new influx of residents coming from states like California and Texas. So Idaho Power, which is the power utility there for the state, has been crediting people who install solar panels on their home, because one of the benefits of this is you have the solar to run your home, but if you've got more energy than your home is using, you can sell back some of that energy to the energy grid, and that energy goes out and other people can use it. So this has been an incentive for people to put solar panels on their homes, because the Idaho Power will give them a credit for how much per kilowatt that they are generating back into the grid. So, Idaho Power had been offering to its customers 8.8 cents per kilowatt hour. And this made a great incentive. People could actually completely offset their home power bills and even make a little money. But as more people added solar panels, more household power bills decline. And that means less money coming into Idaho Power. So, in January of last year, Idaho Power cut that metering rate, is what they call it, from 8.8 cents down to 6.18 cents. Now, Idaho Power is back asking the State Public Utilities Commission to lower that 6.18 cent return rate down to just 2.46 cents, a 60% decline in how much you get credited back for selling your solar power back to the grid. And it's not as if Idaho Power was losing money on this, because even though you had gotten down, even if you say you generated 10 times as much power for your house as it needed, you always had a minimum $5 power bill. Even if you generated a whole surplus back to them, Idaho Power still makes $5 on you. They raised that to $15 this year in January. So there's already a $15 minimum coming in. Even if your solar completely supplies all your electricity needs and starts giving electricity back to the grid, you still got to pay a minimum of $15. So Idaho Power is not really losing money on the deal. But still, they want to claw back more of it by reducing by 60% how much you're going to get credited for your solar power. Well, naturally, this hits the homeowners. Some of them saying, look, now you've totally removed the incentive for putting up solar power. It's getting to the point with that low rate that they're suggesting that the costs of installing the solar panel wouldn't be recouped with such a low return rate. So here we have a situation of increasing global climate change due to the burning of fossil fuels. We've got a solution to reduce the amount of energy being generated by those fossil fuels by using solar panels, the free energy coming from the sun. The wave of the future as far as how energy is going to be distributed in this country. And now Idaho wants to de-incentivize that and get people back to using more climate-destroying fossil fuels. As the Democrats try to gain their footing these days, facing only a 27% approval rate nationwide and being 9 points underwater with their own voters, 49% disapprove, 40% approve, the Democrats have to find their footing, find a way to move forward with the 2026 elections in the House and the 2028 election for president. And there are many things that they could do to try to bring voters around to their side, but I think the number one thing the Democratic Party needs to do is to become the party of prosecutions. The lawlessness that has been running rampant since Trump made his way down that escalator in 2015 has the country hungry for justice and holding these leaders to account. And as we see the leaders of South Korea, Brazil, other countries that have faced coups and bribery and scandal and corruption that hold their leaders to account, that actually jail them, it becomes more and more untenable to have this attitude of looking forward and breezing past the past and letting bygones be bygones. It's been a problem going all the way back to Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon getting pardoned by Gerald Ford and the Democrats not holding him to account for that, not holding the Reagan, Bush, Iran-Contra people to account, not holding the George W. Bush, Abu Ghraib torture people to account. Every Democratic president that gets in there wants to look forward and wants to not appear partisan, doesn't want to appear to be weaponizing the Department of Justice to go after their political rivals. Well, those days are over. Those days are over. We've got a Department of Justice that is now weaponized, that is giving favors to Mel Gibson and sacking the good Department of Justice employees who wouldn't give favors to Mel Gibson. The lack of Democrats' stomach for prosecuting their opponents for fear of seeming partisan has left the door wide open for Republicans to do just that. The next Democratic candidate running for president should come right out and say, we are no longer going to tiptoe around the crimes of powerful people. The rich, the powerful, will be held to account. We will be the party of the people. We'll be the party of the poor, and we will be the party of prosecutions. It was Merrick Garland's intransigence in going after Donald Trump and the ringleaders of January 6th that led us to the position we're in today. We want the next Democrat to throw the book at them, lock them up, run on, lock them up. You will win a landslide and a mandate like the likes of which have never been seen before. Well, that's all for today. We're cutting things a little bit short with today's podcast. I'm having some issues with my RadicalRust.com website. Oddly enough, it will not come up on my laptop, keeps timing out, but it's coming up on my phone just fine. So hopefully you're listening to this because I was able to upload it through my phone. Otherwise, I've got bigger fish to fry. We'll figure it out when we can. The Radical Rust Show is produced, directed, researched, written, recited, posted, and catered by me, Radical Rust Belleville, and governed by Creative Commons share-alike licensing. My main theme is We Love the Herb by Herbal Nation, and interstitial music is by freestockmusic.com and VTEMO, courtesy of freetouse.com/music. You can contact me by email at radicalrust@gmail.com. Call my message line at 877-RUST-420, that's 877-877-420, and reach me on social media on Blue Sky as RadicalRust.com and nowhere else. And for our post-credit scene, let's check in on the Dow Jones Industrial Average, which is down a bit from being up 1,400 points. It's now up 900 points. I guess this is the rebound day? What is it, a dead cat bounce happening? I don't know all these fancy stock terms. We'll see how this lasts for the rest of the week. You can support this podcast financially by donating to Radical Rust on Venmo, Rad Rust on Cash App, or via PayPal on my website at RadicalRust.com, if you're able to access that website. You can get this podcast on Spotify, Apple Music, my website, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening, and until next time, take care of each other.